I think I found him. House of Master of America. House Master of America. President.
Okay, we are back from recess, and the next order of business is a discussion regarding time cards. Jim?
Yeah, so I posted this item just as a discussion. When we had through budget process, we were reviewing different processes and realized that our organization, as size as we are, we do our manual, our time clocks, our time sheets manual, and looking for ways to cut costs and be more efficient. I got with Mark and IS to see what, if any, options are available to integrate a time card type machine with a card swipe or something like that, or some sort of biometric scanning to be able to, for people to clock in and clock out, basically, that would integrate into our Mass 90 system so that we could eliminate a lot of the manual processes that we have. I know that Don spends a lot of time calculating, and every department spends time gathering, signing time cards, and for, in an effort to be more efficient, reduce some labor, and integrate into our accounting system. That's why I wanted to bring that discussion up. I think Mark and I had found together a system that would take multiple entry points and multiple different types of entry points. It could range from a keypad to a card swipe to a fingerprint. There's multiple ways to log in. So the system that we initially had found was strictly a system that would be integrated, and first and foremost, integrated into our Mass 90 system so that we would not have, we'd have less labor-intensive process. And so,
tell me what you guys have discovered, how that works with the system that we have in place, that Rick has in his office, the Mass 90. Or who wants to address that?
I mean,
Rick,
it's just,
Mark?
Yeah.
Both? Help me, if you guys will, to understand what...
I mean, it's fairly simple. It's just basically a time card. Either they swipe the card, key fob, or biometric. There's a whole bunch of different types of time card systems.
You don't have any of that right now. You did ask about right now, didn't you?
No, he said how it interfaces, how it would interface. Yeah, we know we don't have it now.
Yeah, we don't have it right now. It's just I'm assuming that these terminals sit on our network here at the county.
Correct.
And Mass 90 is sitting in at Don's office. And as everybody swipes in, it will basically immediately record the clock in and the clock outs with Mass 90 on the fly and not have anybody keeping track of their time on a timesheet anymore.
Okay, help me out. So instead of going through the manual process of what we do with time cards, the suggestion is to eliminate that and to have the machine record all the time. Is that would work with?
That's the way it would work. Yeah. There would be no more manual filling out timesheets anymore.
Most large corporations or companies of hundreds of employees do this. I mean, this is a way to just be more automated. Besides. There's two ways to look at time cards and timesheets, and the one way I want to get out in the open is not to double-check people's hours and saying you are working or you're not working. That's not this. This is strictly to be more automated. We have a very robust accounting system called Mass 90 that we're not utilizing to its fullest. There's a lot of companies out there that have applications that integrate time card machines. This is just, we found one that had a lot of references, but there's more than one. We would have to obviously go out for bids and we can bring demos in and all that, but the discussion really is to move forward even looking into it. You know, it's going to take effort, energy, and Mr. Erickson's going to have to do some sort of RFQ just to see what's out there. But the application that we narrowed our initial look down was had great references, different type of input points, and then fully integrated with Mass 90.
Jim, you got a couple of questions. One would be how that would affect boys at Road and Bridge on the locations that we have three barns. Also, the cost factor that would be involved with providing the service to the county versus what we're doing now. You had kind of
let me kind of pamphlet
that you had put out that had some cost factors on it. So let me start
from the how we do with remote sites. All of our locations are remotely connected now through the IT department. The initial discussion was to have input points at every road and bridge barn, any remote location such as the airport. We could have it at multiple buildings. Similar to like in the judicial building, you're already using your card scan to go access. That process wouldn't change. You would just scan across the time machine, the time clock machine, when you walk in the building, and then it would record you're clocked in. You could either do it with a keypad. You could use a five-digit code. There's multiple ways to do it. But from a remote location, that's not an issue because we're already connected to all these locations. And because we're networked, it's just a matter of putting the right type of endpoint out there. Like I said, it could be a fingerprint, it could be a card swipe, it could be just a 10-key, computer screen. It could be multiple different types depending on the environment. So the connection point is not the issue. The cost related to that, it just depends on, once again, what we choose, what's best for that environment. There is some application that you can use a computer. You can log in, have a computer there, and it could be your time card machine. If that's the case, then we're just talking a low-cost computer would run the application. So there's multiple options. I mean, one of the companies that people usually hear is Kronos, which is a large, large company that does it for all the big companies. And that integrates with Mass90, but not as clearly or effortlessly as the ones that are built for Mass90. Cost-wise, what we'd have to do is come down to what we were looking for from a perspective of how many points, what type of points, before I could say it. It ranges from, I saw some applications, some pricing from $300 to $3,000 or $4,000, depending on what we're looking for. If we're looking for an eye scan, it'll be thousands of dollars per, and the point is, are we trying to catch people not logging in, or are we just trying to gather the employee information so that they're clocked in? I mean, some people use retina scan because it's more sensitive, and I don't think we're going that direction. We're going for just a way to automate the system and automate the process.
Well, I know that I don't remember how many years ago it was, but it was a number of years ago the county attempted to do that, and it wasn't a pleasant experience for everyone. Now I'm listening because I'm intrigued by the fact that we don't have to manually do it anymore. That's nice that it would automatically do that.
Well, not necessarily.
Hold on just for a second. Okay. My understanding, and then you can straighten me out.
No, go ahead.
If I'm gathering this right, mm-hmm. so if Ron Hassman swipes a card, it has my time, mm-hmm. and when I leave, my mm-hmm. time. And calculates hours, mm-hmm. and then that's somehow tied into the Mass90 that computes what Ron Hassman gets paid. Which seems like it would cut down on a lot of work, but there might be a lot of things that I don't.
It would work pretty well in our offices here that we have, where we have computers already. We basically do a lot of that same thing already because they do their time cards on the computer, send those to Don, mm-hmm. And go that way. So that's the dilemma, and the problem areas will be probably the road and bridge and sheriff's department. And in my mind, I see the problem areas as more of a problem than a solution. Maybe even more less cost efficient when we look at it.
Let me ask you a quick question. In R&B, if we have R&B guys that go to they're assigned road barns and check in, that the problem would be what?
Harlan may be able to help me, but I suspect that sometimes these guys recognize that they're going to be working way over here on Eastern County away from our road barn, and so they probably wouldn't come to the road barn check in. I know the sheriff's department does that. Harlan, did you get anything to say about that?
Occasionally, when we do, the main problem would be like chip and seal time, where there could be a 2-hour overtime interval from the chip crew. They filter in, and if you had a clock in a barn, you'd have to, I always lock it when I leave, and they go on home. But if they somebody has to be there to open the barn, they have to clock out to get necessary. Would be a
I mean, once again, it's industries across the world do this. So they work through the problems. I know that this is an issue. We may have to make it weatherproof outside for the road and bridge barn. It's not, once again, the efficiencies would outweigh these small hurdles. I know that you get the time cards electronically, but someone else prepares them.
I recognize that you think the efficiencies would outweigh that, but Jim, you have to recognize, don't state that as a fact, because I haven't done enough study to say that I would be on your side or I would be on the opposite side. But I see that there might be a lot of things that we want to consider before we'd say it's the efficiency is worth it. So,
well, I did call Sharon, and I talked to Sharon. She takes care of our Mass 90. There's a few things we would have to do to integrate everything. She said Christian County just went through, and I thought maybe it would be wise for us to call Christian County and go up there and look and see. They do a paychecks, and it's all integrated in, and they can do a lot of the same thing. And so if we was going to go that way, see how their road and bridge, because they've got the same thing we do, you know, issues, and just see how it works for them. They had done that. Cron, you'd said something.
They used Cronus for
Cronus
a while.
For a while.
There was a problem there.
They didn't
they
care for that, but they have gone to what they call the paychecks. And she said that they. Another thing is that she said we need to be careful on how.
Does Sharon work with them there in Christian?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so. It's there's not only is it going into Mass 90, but there's going to be issues that we need to it to go up from Mass 90 back out, and there'll be some programming things that we still have to, you know, when you get it all set up. And she said that they've already got those issues worked out, but if we were really serious about it, that may be something that we want to go and look and see. She was concerned because she had never heard of the Time Master. Not saying it would not work. It's just that. You know, there was a few things. Mass 90, we are going to have to purchase. It's called a visual integrator, right. So that Mass 90 will be able to do it.
And one of the things I just want to point out, I'm not choosing one company or the other.
Right.
All this discussion is, should we even pursue looking at the automation part? It's not saying I'm supporting this company or not supporting another company. The discussion needs to happen is, that do we want to even extend the energy to look into that?
That's what we need to look at right there. Yeah.
The Time Master one was just one of the ones we found just to make sure that those features were available.
Yeah, and I knew you'd said that, so we just when, I was just kind of finding out.
Don, and probably something I should have come and talked to you earlier about. My real concern is whenever you use this type of system, if a person comes in and the hours are 7:02 that they get there, or they get there at 6:59, and then they come in and they quit at 5 o'clock. Is there 2 minutes worth of time that is this scheduled? Is there a leniency time? Does when their check come out, does it show that they have 39 hours and 33 minutes that they're being paid for versus 40 hours, or does it...
We have to pay them for what they work.
10 minutes.
Well, it's a 10-minute window.
Yeah. Danny, there's probably some leniency within the programming where you can set that to a certain closeness, I would guess. Mark kind of indicated he thought the same thing.
Let me ask you this. Now, we're talking about there's definitely some cost in this. I myself think that although we've had discussion, and that's what we're in, here's discussion about this, I myself would rather see more stringent rules put upon the people that keep the time sheets for people to come in and use the monies available that we can scratch up in any way possible way for pay raises, that's to spend the money on it and have these complications of where you're going to have a 10-minute window is an opportunity for somebody to mess around 10 minutes a day. Look, we have constantly throughout business, we have people that come to work early, are dedicated to their jobs, and try to do it. And we also have people that take advantage of every minute that they can be off. I understand what we're trying to do, but I also see some very, very serious complications in what we're trying to do, and I don't understand enough about it to be, if there's a 10-minute window one way or the other, then you're talking about 20 minutes. Some people come in. Some people are dedicated to their job and show up early, and I think they should be paid for that. But the fact that somebody shows up 10 minutes late every day should be, from the perspective of the elected official or the department head, handled in that way. Mm-hmm. So I see some real complications with that, and the money for raises for the employees that might be spent on this direction would be more important to me.
Yeah, well, what I'm concerned about is if we decide to implement it and some elected officials come in and say, I ain't going to do it, so then it puts me in a pickle right in the middle because I'm pushing some over and some not. And I'm still going to be doing that to some extent. But, if we're going to do it, it needs to be the support of all elected officials, because it will be a nightmare on my side to do all this.
Well, we had that nightmare before.
Yes, we did.
You and I remember that.
Yes, we do.
I remember that.
And I wasn't. Well, that's the reason I was so against it.
But
so.
But what's been brought to the board for us to look at is, in fact, will this automation save us money? Will this automation save us time? Will it, in fact, make things easier? So, from that perspective, as what we really need to look at, and I don't know the answer to that, but I like some of the things I hear. But Jimmy, you,
what, one of the things that from last time that we tried this, I remember it ended up costing us more, and we had people that would watch the clock, whereas now if they've got product that they're trying to get done, jobs to be finished up, they'll go ahead and finish up the jobs and leave whenever they're done. When you've got the time clock there, they'll look and say, well, I don't have time to do this job, so because you're going to be on them to punch out on time because you don't want to pay the overtime. Mm-hmm. So they won't start that job. So it actually will affect the amount of work that they put out, to that point.
And then some will come in 10 or 15 minutes early just so they can clock in. They may not work, but
yeah,
they may be here.
It poses a huge problem for us, because we have guys that, of course, as they come on out in the areas that they live in, we hold those calls for them to take as soon as they come on. So they may not get to the office for an hour or 2 hours after they're working, because they're automatically taking calls as soon as they come on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what these systems provide for that. We also have people that are, subpoenaed in the courts all the time. Today, I'm subpoenaed in the Christian County Court.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason for some of them to drive 30 minutes to come to our office to punch in and then drive right back past their house to Christian County. Those things would be a problem. We have emergency call outs. They don't have time to come in and punch out. They've got to go straight to calls. We have people, the jailers, that go over to the hospital to set on inmates. They come on from their house and go straight to the hospital.
Well, and just point out that the endpoints or input points can be anything. If it's electronic, so I know that it could be the police cars, the sheriff's cars with the computers in them. I mean, there's full integration mostly with any application, so it's just a matter of us knowing those specific issues and looking into it if we're even interested in integration. Matt, what I really was hoping the discussion would be is, are we even interested in looking for cost savings versus tearing apart the idea of an integration? I mean, either we're open to looking or we're not open to looking. And we won't know until we actually dive in and look at those issues that Jimmy's brought up and the road and bridge issues. But and then obviously seeing how we run Mass 90, because not every company runs Mass 90 the same. I mean, it's modules, and I understand that.
Thank you.
Mark?
Yeah.
For the points that Jimmy brought up and that were brought up regarding R&B and that Jim just addressed, so if we have the equipment that's within a vehicle, whether it be R&B or the Sheriff's Department, remotely that can clock in?
Mm-hmm. There's a web-based clock in, clock out utility for it, but the one that we investigated. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we could have it so they can VPN in, and which all the police, all the deputies are already doing now to run their applications right in the car right now. So that could just be another icon on their desktop to clock in and clock out.
So my question is, that it wouldn't be doing anything differently than they're currently doing.
It's just a little bit, I think it keeps everybody just a little bit more honest. I mean, when you clock in, it records the time of when you did it. It's not, you fill out your time card, when you get around filling out your time card, come the date of submitting the time cards to Dawn. I mean, that happens around our office all the time. Time cards, everybody give us your time cards. Everybody's give you your time cards. And then Melissa's, you know, I are sitting there looking over everybody's hours. I mean, I've got a couple people that come in at 6 a.m. I don't really know if they're there at 6 a.m. or not. You know, I've never had any complaints, and I don't have any problems with the work that they do, but there are, I mean, that it'll give you something to work with at that point.
But here's the question, and I appreciate, this is a discussion that we're having, and I appreciate what Jim said about this being a discussion, because that's what it is, to figure out whether we want to do something or not.
Mm-hmm.
But what is a concern to me is the fact that you're relying upon the honesty of the person that you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. We have certain departments right now that have requested time clocks for the individuals that they have in their, because of their own satisfaction of knowing whether that person's coming in, or they may have some problem in their office or something that they decide they want to use a time clock to check things out.
Right.
Does it work for the entire system? I don't know. That's what this discussion's about.
Right.
And if it causes more work in the long run for Don, who is going to figure 6:12 or 7, I know that you've wanted to say something, there's a 10-minute window that you're talking about.
That would depend on what we chose it to be. It wouldn't have to be 10 minutes.
But here's what I'm saying. Do they get paid for that amount of time by the minute, or do they get paid, like if they come in, do they...
It's whatever we want.
You can say
the reality is we're supposed to pay for anybody down to the minute what they work.
No, you can't set it according to whatever you want. There's federal law that states
you've got to pay for them.
You've got to pay for what they work.
Right, because when we went through that audit, we found out.
Absolutely.
I mean,
if they're on the phone, and this is what I went through whenever I went through the FLSA audit. If they take a phone call and are on the phone for 2 minutes while they're at home, then they are to put that down
exactly
on their timesheet and be paid for that.
Right.
So
when
don't get to thinking that we can set this however we want.
One of the things I was going to point out, there is some features to provide what's called tardy reports. So that's parameter, what I'm talking. Let's say we have someone who's clocking in at 9 after the whatever they're supposed to. They're supposed to be here at 7. They're clocking in at 9 after. Well, if your parameter is only report people who are clocking in 10 minutes late, that's the reporting. What I'm saying is that it would pay exactly when they clocked in down to the minute, but there's reports you can get out. Who's clocking in chronically early? Who's always late? Those are reports, the parameters that I was referring to, because I keep on saying we have to pay them. If they clock in, we pay them down to the minute what it is. So it's a more accurate way.
Here's what I guess maybe I have a hard time expressing myself sometimes. What I'm saying to you is every paycheck that comes out that a person receives from this county where they fill out a time card, is every paycheck you receive going to be a different number?
Yes,
depends on if they clocked in. If they didn't work 40 hours exactly.
That's what I mean.
If they work 39 hours and 59 minutes, I mean, they would be less than the 40 that people are putting in.
And then you're going to have to tell it which employees are being paid only taking a 30-minute lunch and which ones are taking an hour lunch. Some just take a 15-minute lunch. So then you got to go in and manually tell it.
Not necessarily. You can require people to clock out for lunch. I mean, there's the parameters you can set the parameters up however we want. Do we want them to, everyone get a 30-minute lunch and we don't have them clock out, or do you want them to clock out for lunch? Those are some things that we can adjust.
How do they do that on Road and Bridge, though?
It's whatever we want to set up. There's not...
I shouldn't say how they do that in Road and Bridge. I should say how they do that in the field.
Hmm. Well, it depends on lots of things. I mean, you could say everyone gets 30-minute lunch. You could say...
What I'm saying, Jim, I'm not trying to...
Well, I mean, it's like I'm trying... I don't have a solution. I'm just trying to have a discussion if we wanted to look at automation. I don't have a solution to recommend to tell you how this program would fix it. I mean, you're asking questions that really gets into the negotiation of a proposal of a solution. All I'm trying to get to is, are we interested in looking at saving money from automating the time card system? That's all I'm asking for.
It may cost you money.
Rick, I hear what you're saying, but we won't know unless we look at it. That's all I keep on hearing from you is we don't know. Well, we don't know until we actually look into it. So don't rain on the parade until we actually figure out what the situation is.
I didn't mean to offend you there.
Well, you're not offending me, but it's like we're all against it, and that's fine. I thought this discussion was, do we want to send Mark to look into a solution to see if we can save money? And we won't know until we say yes, Mark, or no, Mark. Then we'll start going through the process. How many hours are spent on time cards? What's the cost going to be to integrate? What's the extra steps that Don may or may not have to do because of it? How does it affect the department heads? You know, what's the cost of these input points? How do we integrate the system in the deputy cars to tie into the system? All those questions have to get answered before I can say it's going to save us money or not save us money.
And I agree with you. I really didn't mean to offend you.
No, you're fine.
Like, let me. What I was saying, I was hearing from you that was going to save us money. I keep hearing that because you never mentioned it before, and that's why I said that.
I've done enough research from labor. We'll save money. I've seen how much labor we spend.
May I say something, Mr.
Donna?
Thank you. I've heard a great deal of exchange today, and I think it's all positive because we certainly need to review these issues. And one thing I think, and the discussion I heard was that we would certainly need to have a way for the supervisor to still review that data prior to it being sent into Mass 90, because Jimmy brought up an issue, is somebody on the phone. So, you know, in my office, I'm just thinking of my office, on election day, sometimes we don't have time to take a break. So we can't really require a 30-minute lunch hour. So there would have to be a way built into the system to adjust for all the different parameters. So I just think the discussion today is a great discussion. We're getting pros and cons from each office or director, and I certainly think I don't really like the idea of adding another cost or increasing government, but I think it's worth spending a little time on doing some more research. Thank you.
Linda?
I would just like to point out it's from a different aspect, and Jimmy kind of pointed on this. As far as the Department of Labor goes, we are required to pay everyone for every all time worked. If for some reason the Department of Labor ever had reason to come in here to check someone's time, say a disgruntled employee that was terminated called them and said, okay, I was paid eight hours a day for so long and I actually worked 8.5 or I worked 9 and I didn't get paid. On that request, they would come in here and they would check through that employee's records, and if they found any reason that it was not correct, they could go through every employee's records here and make us go back and back pay them. Say they clocked in or they came to work at 7:30 and started work at 20 till, even though their hours were at 8 o'clock and they only put in 8. We would be not only have to go back and pay them, but possibly penalized.
And this time clock will not change that. Because we went through that, the exact same thing that you said. Okay. An employee made a complaint. They came down, done an audit, went through all the timesheets, went through the radio logs where they come on duty. The employees said, well, we lied about it. We actually worked more hours. The federal investigators that came down told us that we done everything the county-wise. We done everything correct. But since they are claiming they're lied about it, and we can't prove they didn't lie about it, that we have to pay them. So the same thing will apply to a time clock. They can say, well, we came in and started work 30 minutes before, but we didn't clock in until the time. And you cannot take any disciplinary action on them, even though they say they lied about it. Mm-hmm. And it's very aggravating to go through that.
That is aggravating.
This is a good discussion. I hate to get into the but, you know, we went through a situation like this, Jimmy, where there was one employee who wrote a letter and signed it and had it notarized and said, I work these hours and no more. And we had to end up paying
They estimated his hours, and it was one of my employees. He said, I didn't work those hours. I don't want paid for it, and wrote them a letter, and we still had to pay him.
And it will do that, yes.
Mm-hmm. That's the reason we had the timesheets changed at the end of that. That even states on there at the bottom of the timesheets that I am accurately, whatever it states on there, that the time is accurately that I... Anyway, we had an attorney come in and redo our timesheets because we wanted to make sure that they signed off on that at the bottom of that timesheet.
That the time that they put on there accurately reflects what they worked.
Yes. So that was one thing, one positive about it.
Could I ask this, because we're going to be considering this as commission, those people that have, and I'm not going to call their names out, that have time cards in their offices now, could they give us a report to as how that effect is affecting their office now? Because there are time cards throughout this courthouse in different offices. Can we get some kind of report from the county commission? Because I think that's where we're at. We're looking for a setup to where we best benefit everybody, but still yet we end up into a large discussion, and look, you know that there's probably 25 or 30 of us sitting here, and you know there's 200 out there listening. So that's where I'm at.
I spoke with Renee Bruska this morning, and she has time cards in her office, and she said it's working well.
One thing I've got, I'm actually looking for more feedback, is it worth any effort of looking at moving more to a salaried system rather than paying hourly?
Oh.
No?
For everybody. Not everybody is exempt in that category.
Well, you guys need to read the FLSA rules. I've been told not everybody falls into that category. We can pay on a salary basis. We cannot make them exempt. So make sure you distinguish between those two. And I think that you automatically thought exempt. No, we can pay salaries. So go ahead.
Right. I still think at that point, if we move to a salaried system, that the timesheet would still have to come into play for approving overtime. Or, you know, if hours aren't being met, we would have to, you know, readjust salary. But that would also cut down on the road and bridge issues of people clocking in and clocking out. I mean, I know in our department, our guys are always on a 40-hour, you know, I see those time cards. They're always 80 hours, and a little bit of comp time here, whatever. But for the most part, they're always getting paid the same thing. So I just didn't know if that's an option to investigate or not. It right now, just throwing it out there, definitely seems a lot less complicated than the time clock and all the other issues that come up with what we've been discussing right now.
Mark, I can tell you that in previous commissions, they wanted everybody put on an hourly. There was a request from previous commissioners that I've worked with that everybody be put on an hourly rate. So where are we at? I mean, if we did that and the commission changes, and you see what I'm saying, it's
right
complicated.
Well, just throwing it out there.
Yeah, I know.
Jim, just for my edification, I know that most of the non-sheriffs or police employees, law enforcement, that's the word I was looking for, or a 40-hour a week, but you all are on X amount for, is it 28-day period? Or?
You can do it on the certified officers, the commissioned officers. You can do it on a 28-day period or a 14-day period. You can break it down however.
But it's different than a 40-hour week, right?
Yes, it's different. They do not receive, they receive straight time up through 85 and a half hours right now on the two-week period. They do not get the time and a half till you get over that 85 and a half hours.
Okay. On a two-week period?
On a two-week period.
Okay.
That's 100, 171 hours, I believe, in a 28-day period.
Yeah, yeah.
I believe that's what it figures.
To bring this back around, when we, as a county, contemplated time cards before, I was a clerk. I was opposed to it. I was opposed to it while we had it. And I was happy when we didn't have it. That was just me. But I looked at it from the perspective of being elected official and wanted to oversee the employees that I had the responsibility for and to take care of the workload that I had as an elected official. What we're being asked today is to consider, because of the situation we're in financially in the economic times, is this a system, and is there a system out there that will actually save us money and will save us time? And I think that's the overriding issue. From that perspective, I don't have a problem looking at it, and I certainly don't have a problem listening to every reason why it won't work and those reasons why it will. But I think, Mark, obviously you'd probably be the best person to answer when there are questions like the sheriff had, or we've got questions in R&B. How will that work electronically? I don't know. So I have to look to somebody like you, because that's way above my pay grade.
Right.
And but I think that from that perspective, we need to look. And if, in fact, we look at it and it makes it easier and saves us money, then it's something that we should go into further, perhaps, for consideration. If it's not going to make it easier, and if it's not going to save us money, then I don't think we ought to look at it at all. But in fairness, I think we should look. But I need a lot of information to help me get to that point. I know that Jimmy saw a lot of frustration before, and I know that we did in our office. But if it saves us money, saves time, and makes it more efficient, we need to know that. And we're not going to know that unless you help supply some of the answers.
Right. We can dig deeper with those vendors and see what all the options cover.
But this, you know, R&B's got some real questions about it. I know the Sheriff's Department's got some real questions about it. But if, in fact, those could be answered to their satisfaction, that would be helpful. If not, then we need to look elsewhere, perhaps.
Yeah, and until that time, Ron, and it's a responsibility of each elected official who's elected by the citizens to make sure that their office runs efficiently. And when you have someone in your office that's showing up late and all your other employees see those things happening, it actually is the elected official or the department head's duty to make sure that's put a stop to.
And this time clock, a time clock system won't change that. It's still going to be the elected official's responsibility to do that, yeah, or the department head. But yeah, that's exactly right. You need to address those problems.
If we decide to do this,
we're not even to the point
that no, I mean, no, 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 no. If we decide to go, we're looking into it. You decided you wanted to look into it, have him. I want to go with him, because it's who's it going to impact is going to be me. Not that I want to make any decisions, but I want to see how each one of these work, because, you know, I need to know what I'm getting into.
How long has Christian County done this? Bob, were they doing it when you were up there?
They did have it in place when I was there. Some of the issues that we had, or probably some of the biggest issues that we had, were they actually had us plugging in remotely from some of the locations that were in the courthouse. And we actually did have some concerns with some of the remote log-ins. For whatever reason, we would have issues just getting it to clock in at times remotely. And so I think those were some of our biggest concerns. They actually have a system where it requires both a fingerprint scan and a card swipe as well. There would be times, too, where there was issues with the fingerprint scanner. Just for example, if there was a wet day outside and your hands got wet, there would be times where it didn't want to reach. And so there are some things, you know, some specific things to make into account.
Rhonda visited with the auditor. She said they changed systems from Cronus to Paychex, and I think maybe Robert's talking about the Cronus, and they changed to Paychex. I don't know that, but that's something you need to look at.
I think it was the Cronus system.
Is this Paychex, is that the software?
Yes.
A Paychex is another type of software.
And that's one that is compatible with Mass 90, is that? Okay.
Let me ask you this. As you go into your Mass 90, and I don't know anything about what you're doing, but when you get to these time cards, does it take into consideration the vacation time, the sick time, the everything, or does that apply? Does that have to be punched into the time clock area?
That's what we'll have to find out. Some systems, they say when you go in, like if you're gone a day, when you go in and you re-swipe, then I'll say you were gone yesterday. I don't show that you clocked out or whatever. What type of time do you want to take? Was it, you just tell it then, and then it's supposed to push way kind of they were talking. It would push over to the supervisor then, and, she would okay, deny, whatever. So there is that type of it. I honestly don't know. We're just going to all learn together is what I'm finding out.
Yeah, I'm just asking a question.
So, yeah, and like
Jim said before, we're probably way past the point that we're come into the discussion about, but at least we've hearing everybody's side of the story,
sure.
And that's the only way that we can make a decision on.
Well, I mean, I'm glad to get it all out right now, because, I mean, these are the questions I'm going to have to ask, or what kind of issues we'll have to have addressed before we even...
Well, quite frankly, if people don't weigh in, you're not going to know what questions need to be asked.
So. Yep. Yeah, so if anybody's got any thoughts on it, please get them out for sure.
And Sharon sent me some questions that we can ask two of the software, because she said there's some things that we need to be able to do that they've dealt with several of them around in this area that has Mass 90. Some of them are not Paychex or different ones, so I've got that too.
Carlin?
Another issue is Rose Bridge is becoming into a factor at night dispatch calls we got three of those. I usually call a man, he has his own personal cell that's close to it. He goes to it, cuts it up, takes care of it. I don't require him to go to the shop. Most of them don't have keys to get in on their select fuse. So we'd have to have some way to factor that time in, and that's quite often.
Well, in my department's the same way. If computers go down here, I've got Sean and Bill, they can remote in from home, they can knock it out in 15 minutes and get things corrected. So even if we do go to an electronic system like this, there's still going to be a sheet for approving time, that did happen, in the off hours or, in the non-typical scenario of keeping track of their time. There's still going to be a way to
call them exception reports.
Yeah, there's going to be exception reports. There's going to be ways to get around that and get those guys paid for sure. It's not going to be a full, this is the way it is, and you're never going to get paid unless you swipe in or swipe out. It's just there to cover 95% of it, and keep that way. That workload is just automated, and then you're still going to have the exceptions for sure. But I don't foresee that being a problem.
More questions? Jim, Danny?
Yeah, I'm good.
When are we going to try to take this back up again?
Let's wait till we get some more information from Mark.
That's what I'm saying. Is it going to be a couple weeks to a month or something like that before we do?
I think that's a good amount of time to kind of pull up some more information. Get some more of these concerns, get answers to the concerns, and especially get with Christian County, that way we're not, getting with them real quick. They'll be comfortable.
There's surely other counties that's on it too, so that would be something that you'd want to notify them. And
right. We just know that Christian County's on Mass 90 is one reason we're looking at.
Yeah, that's the only reason I was wanting to
Thank you, everybody. Mr. Suti, if I could get you to come up, I think you're next. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Well, you let us know when you pulled some work.
I heard most of the concerns. You can go check it out. And
thanks, guys. See you, bud.
No.
Mr. Suti.
Morning.
Good morning.
The sewer board had requested to meet with the county commission to discuss the three issues that I've prepared a letter summary explaining those issues and sent a copy upstairs.
Do you have a copy there for us?
Well, I'd emailed it up. I thought one maybe had been prepared for
me. Let me look. Maybe she's in fact.
You got it, man.
I got my copy.
I can go back.
I didn't bring it down. No, that's okay.
Well, I can briefly go through this. And then,
it's right here.
Okay.
I got an email, but it wasn't. I didn't think it was anywhere near that long.
I'd sent one to Amy, and I'd enclosed some exhibits of some of the information and stuff that I was that we wanted to speak about. There's kind of three issues out there. One is the Short Creek property, currently where the animal shelters are currently located in the shooting range. You know, due to the separation between the county and the sewer district, we have a pump station there. PP5 is one of our major lift stations that handles all of the wastewater from Table Rock Dam all the way back to Short Creek itself. It's and it'll soon be handling wastewater from Emerald Point and Table Rock Canyon development, which is a development in the making. I mean, it's established as the name Table Rock Canyon, but, you know, due to the economy, it's slowed down a little bit. We looked at the properties as well as the property that our offices are located in, and there were some survey needs there. And I discussed with Doug Fabian with HDR about what it would cost to survey off the pumping station and have an access road that we now use that goes by the animal shelter, goes down the hill to Short Creek, and not, you know, just have an easement ingress. Egress easement there to get to the pump station site. And in discussion, there had been talk about in the future constructing a wastewater treatment facility somewhere in the Short Creek area. There's some the property that's just due west of the shooting range. It's just south of the Empire substation property. There's about 3 acres there that with some site work could probably be shaped up, you know, level enough to support a wastewater treatment facility. During the budget process, we had discussed two feasibility studies. One was to convert the Short Creek system, which is now a gravity pump, low pressure system, a grinder pump, low pressure system, to gravity. And then the other feasibility study was the construction of the wastewater treatment plant in that watershed for this location. So before we would start any survey work just to survey out the pumping station, we wanted to talk to the commission to see if you gentlemen would entertain possibly in some way transferring that 3 or 4 acres of property to the sewer district to serve the public in the future for wastewater needs in that area.
In the general area, is that the best location?
Well, that's what the feasibility study would show. We would look at alternate locations. The one reason we're looking at that location, and we walked it out, a couple of sewer board members and I have walked the property. We didn't have any survey or any topo information, but it does lie reasonably well for Taney County, you know, that with some site work it probably could work. It's not, 5 or 6 acres of good flat ground where we could expand and build upon the next 20 years, but there is probably enough land there to support a 500,000-gallon-a-day facility, which due to new technologies, these plants these days don't take the amount of property that they did 10 or 15 years ago. But that's what the feasibility study would determine and show us.
That is the exact location. There's not another surrounding property.
Well, that's what we would have to look at. Is this location the best for that use, or would another property within the general location be better served? In that watershed, it's pretty much defined by steep slopes. There is some flat areas along Short Creek, but then there's a question of high-level rapid rainfall events. Do they flood? I mean, there's some concerns with that. The main thing to us is kind of the usage. The county already owns the property. That's a plus. The use is on the property being a shooting range at this time. And the animal shelter, most people, of course, don't want a wastewater plant in their backyard. So we're kind of on a property that's kind of removed from that issue. And then the prevailing winds being out of the southwest, there's not a lot of population density going to the northeast of this property as far as odors and things like that, which you shouldn't have any. But when you're dealing with the wastewater facility, at time, you could have from time to time. So that's the positives about the property. There is some other property south on the other side of 165 Highway, but again, it's right on Short Creek, and there's the flooding and the FEMA issues, stuff like that. That would be a concern, but those things would come out in the study of the location, the type of process we would want to employ if we built the wastewater plant there. Going into a discharge that's going into Lake Tinicomo, there's discharge limits that have to be taken into consideration. And so there's quite a bit to it, But the general discussion would be, would the commission, if all things pointed that that was the best property, would you be inclined to work with us on that land?
Can I ask you a couple of questions?
Yes, sir.
About that? Is right now is it two questions? Are we open to the property, and are we open to a feasibility study? Is that the two questions?
Well, the feasibility study, has been budgeted, and I do have a funding agreement for the study.
Okay, so you're working through the feasibility study.
Well, we haven't sent out an RFQ yet,
okay,
because we just want to make sure that the commission would entertain us using that property for that purpose if all things indicated that it was good to
do. From my perspective, to answer the question, if the feasibility showed that that was the best place or use, or that's a preferred place to do a treatment plant, I would be open to it. If that helps you from an individual commissioner's perspective. I mean, obviously we want to wait till the feasibility study to see if that's the best place. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're saying.
Yes.
How many acres is out there?
Well, there's probably over 10 acres out there, but the actual usable area, and that's just me using Beacon and kind of scaling off, is probably 3.5 to 4 acres.
Okay.
Just south of the Empire property where their substation is, and just west of the shooting range.
I'm in the bank post area. Yeah, he's got it here on the right.
But it would need some site work. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But it don't lie as bad as what one would think it would when you walk up in there and kind of walk it out.
Well, if we reach that point, we'd be under the requirement now to have that property appraised.
The question would be with me, if they're interested in the property for it, then let's have the appraisal done.
We don't know how big a space they need until after the feasibility study. I mean, you have the proposed area, but I would assume it would get more refined as the feasibility study.
Yeah, that's just me giving you.
So, I mean, I would think that since you're moving forward with the feasibility study, once we get back and you say, oh, we need 2 acres or we need 7 acres, mm-hmm. part of the feasibility study will come out and say, okay, we need this for it to be functional. We need this much property, and this is where it lay. Then we can do the survey. I guess what John's asking is, are we open to selling it or gifting or whatever if the feasibility shows up that we need it there? My answer is, if that's the study shows that, and that's the best location, I would be open to figuring out how we could do that. Do that as a treatment plant. Yes, okay. That's my position.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr.
I'm with you, but except I think that these gentlemen have already walked it. Two board members have walked it. Are they going to hire an engineering firm mm-hmm. to do the feasibility study?
Yes.
Are they accepting the fact that they're going to need so many acres in this particular area to do it? Because I also heard road easement brought into consideration, which will have to be figured in.
Part of part of this, if we move forward with the wastewater plant, due to some of the construction of the shooting range and Mr. Smith's property on the east side of the road easement is not really wide enough to support, you know, pump trucks and stuff like that. So we would need to negotiate with Empire Electric to get some of their property to come in from the north side of the animal shelter.
So your specific question is, are we open?
My thing is that do you have any future do you have any future plans for that property that would preclude us from doing that? And if so, we need to look somewhere else. And if not,
are you
open to? Of course, we would rather entertain the gift.
I understand.
Because it's for the public good. This ain't going to be an endeavor that's going to make us a lot of money. I mean, the wastewater business.
I understand.
You know what I'm saying?
I think that we have to cross that board, that challenge at a later date.
Okay.
I mean, because once again, we're dealing with an FM-160 property where the Tane County Eminence District wants it for the common good. But if there's a value, we need to look at appraisal values and all that. Yeah. So I hope you understand that.
Oh, I understand that.
But I think your question is if we're open to it, I'm open to what the feasibility says.
Okay.
And if that requires a portion that we can live with, then yes. I mean, but if they come back and say we need all 10 acres, then obviously I'm no longer open because I have an animal shelter out there and a shooting range.
Well, I don't think that we would want to do anything that would in any way affect the shooting range or the animal shelter. We know that that's something we don't want to do.
Right.
I mean, the animal shelter is there, and it's a good location for it. That's why at one time there was some look at where the shooting range is, and it wasn't through us, it was through the city of Hollister. And that's what kind of got, I don't know, I didn't really have any data, but that's what got us looking at that. Well, we went back out, and like I said, we walked it, and we can think that we can do this. Of course, the study would have to back me up on that without having to even affect those two uses. Yeah. So I guess that's all I'm asking is that we proceed and we spend the money to do this feasibility study, and if the things come back in a positive manner, would you gentlemen be willing to take that next step to negotiate how we could transfer the property?
My answer is yes.
My answer is yes. My suggestion is to look at surrounding properties as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think we ought to also.
Okay.
But, the factor of land purchase would enter into that, and I don't know. How you gentlemen would address that either, but that would be a cost that would probably be a negative on other properties.
I can tell you when the sewer district was treated as if it was under the umbrella of the county, that wouldn't have been a consideration. Today, the district separated.
Yes.
There's malfeasance of office to consider by giving away county property, so
It
definitely will be a consideration.
But we're open.
Okay.
I'm open. Ron's open. I think Danny's nodding, saying he's open. So,
okay.
Question number two.
Okay, the Lake Board, as we was going through the budget process, there was concerns issued about the Lake Board option, and the commission we discussed different items concerning that, if there have been public hearings, this, that, and the other. The commission discussed wanting to do a study to see if a wastewater treatment plant in that area would be the better solution rather than the Lake Board. What we wanted to do is and I've got a copy of the information from Great River Engineering that was in my, it's Exhibit 2, that we did do that, a few years back. When we done the engineering report for that area, those things were looked at. We looked at the Lake Bore option. We looked at an option to build a wastewater plant in the Ozark by Power Site Dam, and which would serve the Ozark Beach area and the Power Site North area. And we looked at a treatment plant for the Power Site North area. And what the engineers do is they'll do a present worth analysis. It's a formula exercise that they go through to give you an approximation of your cost and which option would be the most feasible, which they've done that, and those results are there. But their present worth analysis showed that, by doing the Lake Bore rather than build the plant, and this is the cost in 2010, those costs maybe have changed a little bit as far as wastewater plants and new limits now required and the equipment you have to have on a treatment plant these days. It probably went up instead of go down. But to do the lake bore rather than the treatment plant, based on their analysis, it was $677,000 cheaper to proceed with the lake bore rather than build a wastewater plant. The first year operation cost of operating the lake bore rather than operating a treatment plant was $85,000 a year less, because we're just operating a force main that's collecting the wastewater, pumping it under the lake. And this is not just a hole under the lake. I mean, there's structures on both sides of the lake. They're going to be up out of the floodplain 20 feet above grade that you go down in, and there's valving rooms in there and the whole nine yards. So, but, of course...
Are you referring to which document right now when you mentioned those costs? I have the document recommendation, GRA study recommendations. That you're reading
off? Yes.
Okay, perfect. Okay.
And I went through it. I just kind of done some of the subtractions and stuff there. But, so... You know, the information showed, and we looked at some locations in that area also. The best location was across from the dam, which I would love to have a treatment plant there on Empire property. It's a walking trail. It's beautiful scenery. It'd be a great place to have an office and work out of. But Mr. Snyder and Empire wasn't too excited about that. So, but we looked at the power site side of things, and again, it's an area that. Water areas are not developed or planned for development. They're characteristically steep slopes, different things like that. And so we did look into that. And with the all things under consideration, you know, the lake bore proved to be the best option at that time. So the sewer board proceeded with that option. And since then, you know, we built the Ozark Beach wastewater collection system, and a portion of that system was designed with capacities built into it to serve Powersite North and get it on into Forsyth. That's about $250,000 that we built into that system. You know, we have our Corps of Engineer permits. We're just almost ready to have our DNR permits. The project design is about 90% complete. And so that's how we went down that road.
How much is the bore going to cost?
The bore is estimated at around $2 million.
So what you're saying is the sewer district has continued to spend money on a project that the county commission has already stated they're not going to fund?
No, the sewer board has spent this money over the last 3 years.
Up until
we met at the budget hearing and you gentlemen told me that you had concerns about the bore option.
So they haven't spent money since then?
Zero.
Okay.
Now, we did put some money in the budget because there are facets of Powersite North of collecting the internal neighborhoods that don't matter whether it goes to a treatment plant or to a bore.
Right.
We're spending no money toward the lake bore.
Right.
We're just in the lake bore itself.
So
we haven't bid out anything.
So
but if we
question
had,
is, will the county commission reconsider that position?
Yes.
Okay.
That was what one of the things that the board wanted to discuss with the commission.
Okay. These gentlemen can speak for themselves. I won't.
Okay.
But Dan can speak to it, and Jim will. I think that what we're looking at, if we bore under the lake, is an invitation to a catastrophe in the future that would be unparalleled in this part of the country.
Well, it's done all over the country.
Yeah.
And I'm not an expert in it, okay? If we done this, I'll be the first to admit it'd be a learning curve on my part. But the technology is used. You know, you're 20 feet below the bottom elevation of the lake. You're in solid rock. Steel casings, there are companies, you know, they bore into the Missouri River. The gas company bored underneath Lake Tanycombe. Of course, that's a gas line.
Right.
But these things are done.
Let me throw it out. Right now, I'm pretty close to it, but is Mel the one who did the study?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I will work with Mel and understand. I don't understand enough. Obviously, the environmental is a huge issue for me. Okay.
Yeah.
The second thing is, and it's for everybody, but
yeah,
from my perspective, it is the environmental is an issue. The second thing is your growth is limited, I believe, because you're not continuing to offer services on the other side of the lake to the county.
Mm-hmm.
And by having a treatment plant on that side of the county, it seems like it'd be a better service to not just the immediate neighborhood, but future growth.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at on that. So what I'd like to do is sit down with Mel, and that's why I'm right now saying no until I understand more, mm-hmm. because of those issues.
Yeah.
And I know, and true, environmental technology has come a long way. And so I believe probably there's a 99% chance that environmentally it's safe. Everyone, it's done quite readily across the country. I understand that.
Okay.
I would just like to understand beyond the immediate neighborhood. What's it look like 15 years from now? Does it open part of the county up that doesn't have sewer services that would potentially develop if we had a treatment plant there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and those are just some of the things that I want to talk to Mel about.
Yeah.
And with you.
Well,
you, Eddie, and maybe Mel, we all sit down and talk about that mm-hmm. for my satisfaction.
Yeah, my point today, I guess, wasn't trying to change your mind or anything like that. I just wanted to present this information and just basically let you know that we had looked at that.
Okay.
And based on the information at that time, that's what, you know, the sewer board, with their engineer, we went that direction. But that's fair. So you basically, I'd have Mel contact your gentleman's reps and set up a time.
I'll send Mel an email right now, and then we'll figure something out where, and you want to be in the meeting.
Yes.
Does Eddie need to be in there?
Probably not.
Okay, so just us three.
Okay.
I'll work on that meeting.
Okay. And that's we just want to make you aware of that.
Great.
Yeah, the lake bore, I mean, it would be something new for us, for sure. We never done anything like that. I, for one, would not cherish something happening and start boiling up out of the lake. I mean, you might, you know, that's, but, you know, just through the study, we've been assured that these things occur. But, you know, the environment is a concern. But the growth thing, that's a good point, you know.
All of Jim's points are well taken, and I welcome those comments. My fear of a lake bore is just monumental, John. And,
yeah.
I mean, tourism, and originally the fishing industry, is the lifeblood of this county.
I agree.
And I'm just paranoid as I can be about that. I'm just up front with that.
Well, we spent probably $60 million since 1994. You know, building these systems, taking out septic tanks, treatment plants. We sure wouldn't want to do something for $2 million and, you know, just throw all that in the trash. You know what I'm saying? So I agree with you. It needs to be looked at.
I understand it wouldn't be anybody's intention to have a catastrophe, but if one were to occur.
Yes. The other item is incorporated areas and this sales tax distribution. December 31st, when we were kind of a county employees under the county umbrella, we kept a track on how much money these incorporated areas had. It was based on that 25% and then divided by those that have viable projects, and which has led to some of these entities having almost $1 million, but they're not doing anything with it. You know, they had projects at the time. When this new guideline was adopted, that actually hasn't been rescinded, but it hasn't really been gone by either. But when it was adopted in incorporated areas, if you have a viable project, then you can get on the list to start obtaining these funds. Engineers would go to these small communities and say, we need to come up with a project so you can get some of this money. Well, some of these entities have been obtaining this money but have done nothing with it. So we have on paper, not actual dollars, but on paper, some of these dollars are in some incorporated areas.
John, beginning, let me ask you a question. In the very beginning, was that accounting done, I mean, at the inception of the passage of the sewer sales tax, or did that come along later? Was there... Originally, when dollars were available and the deal was cut, if you will, that the county would consider passing through some of the dollars that belonged to the county to the incorporated areas for capital improvements of sewer projects.
Yes.
If they utilized it, they did. If they didn't, was it just rolled over into the overall tax and then they got a portion of the next year's tax? Somewhere along the line, somebody made the decision in the sewer district, and I assume commission, that they would start accumulating those dollars and tracking those dollars if they weren't used.
Yeah, it
but it wasn't that way in the beginning, was it?
No, in the beginning it was basically, you know, that the agreements were made that each entity would receive a portion of 25% of these dollars, each incorporated area. And that wasn't clear on what manner that they would apply for these funds or use these funds. So each incorporated area, we come up with just a simple outline. It's like three pages that says, you know, you come in and the commission utilized the sewer staff at that time. You know, we look at it, we verify that it is for wastewater endeavors, and then we would, you know, write a staff report up to the commission that we recommend that they, that their project be funded. And that's kind of how it started. Then that worked until probably 99, and then Joe Chowning was presiding commissioner, and there was thought that they were, that the incorporated areas were being micromanaged too much by the sewer district and the commission, so they decided just to pass those dollars through. I mean actual dollars. Check each month. Here's your share. And that worked with 99% of the incorporated areas worked fine. With, and that was with the caveat that they got to provide a professionally performed audit to the county to show where those dollars were and where they were spent at. Until we had a problem with one incorporated area that was doing everything you could think of with the money except build sewers. And that led to a bunch of issues there. But in order to address that, that's when these guidelines were that come out. And Larry Van Gilder, I think Ron Herschen and Rick Ziegenfuss were very instrumental in these guidelines. But I think we swung way back over here to the right too far, because there's some things in these guidelines that I don't think in practicality that you can really enforce. Telling an entity how much money they can borrow and how they do this and that. But this is where the viable project issue come up.
If I'm not mistaken, what we were advised, but we were told that the fact we were going to pass dollars through from the state auditor's office was you have to identify that those dollars are being spent on capital improvements. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure that those dollars are being spent on capital improvements, or the commission would face the liability for having misspent the funds.
I would believe, I remember I was here, and I wholly agree, and I've always maintained that there's really three people in the county that's ultimately responsible, in my opinion, that would be the county commission on the sales tax dollars.
Currently, what I think we're doing, at least for this 2012 budget, until we got this whole separation issue and all the legal issues combined with dividing the entities completed, where we were going to rely upon the sewer district to identify whether or not the dollars that were being requested were for, in fact, capital improvements. If then you were to tell us, yes, the city of XXX has a project, and we say that that meets the criteria, mm-hmm. we were ready, at least in this budget, to write that check and send it.
And that's what we've done.
Yes.
That's what we've done. And, I mean, Jim, Danny's been here through those times. I've come up with Forsyth or something, and it's worked fine. It's I don't want to say it's an informal process, but it's not highly orchestrated process. And that's worked very well. There was kind of, you know, like the sewer district, we enter into funding agreements with the county commission for specific projects. And those projects are pretty well identified. They have construction time frames or design time frames with us. I didn't know, and that's something that's on the commission level, if those areas are going to need to enter into funding agreements with the county commission to use those funds like the sewer district did. Because, like I said, some of these entities are sitting on hundreds of thousands of dollars that really they haven't had a project at one time, but due to the economy or whatever.
Well, one of the things that you brought up in the budget hearing, if I'm remembering the timeline right, was who oversees the project? Let's say that we hear a good project, we want to fund the project, okay? And let's say we figure out what the agreement looks like. Mm-hmm. Is that something that your department will watch over to make sure that it's being done like they've requested?
I think there's a liability question with the sewer district on that our attorney has a concern about.
So what would you, well, obviously I want to be able to pass them, you know, if there's a project for these incorporated areas, I would like to make sure from my perspective that we could fund it. So the question is, what do you propose, or how do you propose us to work through this? Because I know there's a few entities that have requests in right now.
Yes.
And I think they're legitimate, mm-hmm. good projects that need to be funded, but how do we get, how do, What is your suggestion or recommendation?
I think from the point of the incorporated area submitting information to my office,
okay,
and I review that, I converse with them, and we, if there's questions, and then if it meets historically what we've done in the past, that we would bring them before the sewer board. The sewer board, if they want to be involved in that process, they would, as we've done in the past, would accept my recommendation that it fits the criteria and they should be funded. Then I write a letter to that incorporated area to give to you gentlemen that demonstrates the sewer board's approval of their request.
Okay.
And then...
That sounds good.
And that's... That way,
and then you come in, we'll fund that project.
Now, oversight of a project, if that's involved in engineer selection and inspectors out there on site.
Well, and I guess I'm not saying that perspective.
Yeah, that's where we get a little scared.
Well, from that perspective, well, I guess what I was trying to say from that aspect is I want the sewer board not to disassociate with this project. So whatever you normally would do, I just wanted to make sure you guys are still engaged.
Yeah.
Reviewing it makes sense for the overall picture for the county.
And
but what you just, how you expressed it just now, I'm good with that. I'm comfortable with that.
And that's kind of, it kind of echoes back to where it all started in the early 90s.
Right.
It's not overly complicated process.
And we'll just fund that project based if you come to us and sewer board, you endorse it, sewer board endorses, and we just say, okay, we're going to fund that project and we're done.
And then, you know, like I said.
Is that right, Ron?
Well, we're.
And then
well,
I don't know.
What we're doing is we're looking at the number of entities that we have, municipalities that are within the county, and we're dividing 25% of the sales tax on an annual basis that comes in, correct?
Yeah.
So the following year, we know exactly what that was the previous year. And those dollars are available for use for capital improvements.
Yeah.
This is one of the questions that we have outlined when we get down into the nitty-gritty of what we're going to have the state hopefully answer for us in their audit.
You know, like the sewer district does, that...
Here's where I'm going with that, because there have been questions that have been raised to us as to those dollars that are currently sitting in the bank that roll over every year in that budget. How come we're not utilizing those funds on sewer projects? How come the county's not utilizing those funds on sewer projects? One of the answers were part of those funds have been earmarked for capital improvement projects within incorporated areas.
Yeah.
They don't really belong to the county. Well, in fact, they do. And because it's a county sales tax. And there was a verbal agreement with the incorporated areas a long time ago that they would pass some of those dollars through. So those are questions we have to have answered and then work with the sewer district and say, you know what, here's this money, let's...
Yeah, we, you know, when we, like Power Site North, where we go with that project, the biosolids project, we've got a lot of things that's going to open up this year that, you know, it looks like there's a lot of money in there right now, but when we get these projects moving, those monies, you know, will be being utilized. And, you know, we come off of the last year and the year before with Dam Site, Ozark Beach, Spring Creek subdivision over in the Branson area and Dam Site, both was in Branson, so we had like four projects going on at all at one time and then some design and stuff. So, you know, we're blessed with the sales tax. It hasn't dropped that much, but it keeps coming in. But we're handling about as many projects as we can manage, you know. The incorporated areas, it just it seemed like if they would relook at themselves or be reviewed on where they were with these projects they submitted a long time ago and update a construction plan or if these projects are going to happen or not, you know, then they ought to be on some kind of timeline that these are legitimate projects.
No, I understand.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm just stating we have questions that have been asked of us. We will ask this, but the state does the audit for that to be a part of what they look into and hopefully give some concrete answers.
On the three projects that's been submitted, and if they've been approved by the sewer board, and I think this is what Jim has already repeated and Ron's talked about, the availability of funds is there. We don't want any uncomfort zones with those people that are in these cities that have submitted the projects.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've been reviewed, you've come to the county commission, we're saying that's a viable project, we're going to release the funds. The funds are available.
Let's, if John will draft the letter, that very letter that he was talking about, that meets that criteria, let's...
I've already drafted a letter for Rockaway Beach, but I spoke to the mayor and I just explained that I didn't know really what that process was going to be, and I assumed it, well, I didn't assume anything, because I didn't know with our split, and I knew that there was some legal things being looked at, so I didn't offer any kind of advice there, but their project, it's a classic. It falls right into what we've done. You know, there's no problem with what they're requesting on their pump station rehabilitation project. It's a good thing. It'd be great for them. You know, very helpful for them. But it just the sewer district, as far as the term oversight and how that oversight is defined, there was a little uncomfortable on how deeply we would get into managing these projects for incorporated areas and liabilities there.
I'm not interested in or asking you to manage the properties, but if the project meets the criteria the capital improvement.
And I don't know, probably these guidelines, you know, that's just something else. We probably need to sit down and relook at that a little bit. Like I said, we used to, you know, we had kind of a uniform.
I'd like to get a copy of that.
And now we've got something that's pretty tough. It's a lot of work to adhere to these, and it puts a pretty strong limitation on what communities can actually do. And over time, we kind of meandered away from them. But that you can have that copy there. And Jim, I'll email you.
Yeah, because I was looking through my.
Mary and Helen's office has a copy on file. And
would you just, email it to me? But I think moving forward is what we need to do is just.
Those need to be revised.
Refine the process and then.
But they're kind of still out there. They just haven't been dealt with, you know. One last thing quickly is we've got word that June 1st is the date that we need to be off of F Highway and 160. We're right now, we're not in a mad scramble, but we are actively trying to find properties in order to purchase to move our location to. We've looked at several properties. It's apparent that about any property we purchase, as far as from a maintenance shop standpoint, is going to require some form of modification. We thought we had one found just a little ways down K Highway, and we got access inside the structure, and it's just totally a mess. It was going to cost buku dollars to get it back to just a level that we would just want to move into. But we are actively pursuing that. Just wanted to let you know if you know of any property that's maybe along the East 76 corridor, Mount Branson. We're actually looking at property itself. If we could find, you know, 2 to 5 acres that we could actually build a structure to and then maybe rent a structure in the meantime. Okay. But we are trying to get, you know, trying to get this figured out. The connexes, we've got the tractors, the equipment. We've got the huge air compressors that run our air systems that we work on the pumps with. So we got some stuff that's going to have to be tore down and physically moved. And so...
Where are you looking in the county?
Well, we're looking, you know, to Mount Branson, probably from Kirbyville to Mount Branson.
Okay.
That would put us kind of in the middle of our systems in the Hollister area and our systems over here in the Ozark Beach area and soon Power Site North, hopefully, in those areas. So we're kind of looking in that middle ground there. I've talked to Silverleaf Resorts, and they have some good property, but some of that they have future plans, so it's like $100,000 an acre. Well, that's way out.
Way out there.
But they are looking at some of their other holdings that might work for us. But there's some property in Kirbyville that's held by out-of-state development companies I've sent letters to. So we're just kind of throwing some lines in the water. But most of the structures we've looked at, either the building's good, but there's not a lot of ground. You know, we needed like a pole barn to park our boom trucks under and stuff like that. We probably need a minimum of 2 acres.
Okay.
That's relatively... I don't want to say flat, but, you know, relatively flat would be preferable, of course. But I just want to let you know we're looking. You know, is that June 1st? Is there any leeway either way of that? Or
Is that something that we put in the agreement?
We did.
No. Well, we didn't really address the, it was originally in the first run, but then it was taken out. But now we just kind of word came down through the legal councils that that's the date that's been talked about.
I think it's in the document. I would say, John, just let's, as we get closer to the date, keep us informed. I'm
well, sure. Yeah.
This is unbelievable.
But
this
yeah.
is unbelievable.
Thank you. Thank you for that observation. But I just want to let you know.
This is only in one page, I think.
Yeah. This, if we find a building to operate out of to repair pumps and stuff, we can move. The connexes are the main thing of where we take those three connexes are ours out there. We've got to have room to put them someplace. And that's what it's kind of tough right now. So I didn't know what the plan was, if we can move them. You know, we got to call a truck out of Springfield, and we got to empty them out, and they got to load them on to haul them to where we move them at. But if there would, if we couldn't get the property in time, there's a room out there at F-160 where we might be able to move them out of the path of clearing or demolishing or whatever we're going to do. That's it.
I would just say is.
Or do you have any room over on 76 over there at the new highway department barn that we might be able to just put them out of the way somewhere? Just I don't expect an answer right now, but just if you think about it.
Okay.
If we rent a place and there's some places to rent, but they just don't have room for us to put those connexes. So.
Okay.
Have you checked on the property beside the facility we have on 76?
Side.
There's a stretch of property in there that runs a full length, doesn't it, Randy? It's right beside it.
I guess not. I guess I didn't know a whole lot about it.
Well, I didn't know. It might be something you want to look into.
Well, we're definitely looking into all the leads we can get, you know, and stuff. So that's what side is that on?
That's on the east side.
On the east side of the property. Okay.
John, we're a half hour behind. We really need
to. I appreciate you talking to me.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, John.
Okay.
Thank you, John. Boys Thank Camp you. Road. Travis?
Well, I just gave you the bid results for Boys Camp. We opened bids last Thursday. Only had two bidders, which typically, according to CDBG requirements, they would make us rebid it. You have to have a minimum of three. But we were able to show that we advertised it in enough places, put it in the plan room, sent it to everybody we could think of to try to get bids. So they're going to allow us to proceed with just these two bids. The bad part about it is the original estimate for the construction was $398,000, roughly. So we're about $52,000 over.
Is this the 50-50 match, up to $250, or what? I can't remember how. Yeah, this is the weird deal.
The grant was basically set at $250. It wasn't really a 50-50 match.
So they're gonna give us $250.
Yeah, and the total with all the our contracts, the grant writers' contracts, everything, right now is $557,603.25.
How exciting is that? Tell me about this line 24 on this bid.
Well, what we did is we were afraid we were going to be close. So what we did is we had a bid alternate in there to extend the guardrail the whole length of the road. Basically, with the amount the bids are, I mean, we'll just take that out.
So we're going to go back to the original 450, yep. 555 versus 462.
Yep.
So what are you looking from us? Do we have to award the bid or?
Well.
Since it's a CDBG grant.
Basically, what you guys had budgeted was $250,000 for this project to match the $250 grant.
And so we're up to
You're going to be up to $307,603.
We're at $307 with this bid.
Yeah.
Because the state's at $250.
Yeah. The state won't go up. And that, it was kind of the agreement that if the bids came in low, you guys would split the difference and the state would maybe only pay $225 or whatever. But we're high.
So. I can just tell you guys, I would be in favor of moving forward. This road floods way too often for us to stop it over this, and we're this close to.
From every project, I don't know what it is lately, but the last three projects I can think of have all had one bidder, and they've all been high. This one had two, and it's high. So I think directly sent this to 9 contractors, everybody I could think of trying to get them to bid. I don't know what the deal is, but all the bids have been high and can't get anyone to bid.
Did you say we're okay under CDBG because of...
Yeah, we did get their approval that they'll let us go with just 2 bids. But
okay, before we consider this, the award date, the time of starting, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Are we in bad weather stretch to award this and have it?
The thinking, I don't know that I necessarily need you to award this today, because what's going to happen is, assuming you're willing to spend this extra money, I guess, we got to get insurance information and everything from Tom Boyce, the low bidder, get him approved, or the company approved through CDBG. I would like to say start date beginning of May sometime. It's a 120-day contract, so it would be May to August, end of August would be the construction timeline. Depending on how all this gets approved through CDBG and everything, it may not start till June, but I'm trying to get it to work over the summer months, partially for weather, partially there's no school buses in. But we gave them 120 days, but 60 days I'd say they could get done pretty easy. So I'm trying to get it to where...
And this has the alternate road and all this stuff in and that.
Mm-hmm. There's 2 bypass roads. So I don't know that I need anything formal from you today other than saying you're willing to say it, spend the extra $57,000.
I'd say let us think about that. I'm willing to move forward with the project, but I've got some other concerns.
Yep. Well, and the other... I can't guarantee anything. I think a couple of these numbers, once we kind of get into construction, I think we'll be able to change order a few things out and get that down a little bit. But being as how this is how it was bid, this is the contract you'd have to sign. Then we say when we could during construction.
Well, I'm willing to move forward, so, but we don't have to make that decision right now. So
you don't need to award it. We'll go ahead and proceed down the line.
Get back on our agenda.
Let me ask you guys, What's the difference in the amount that the county was scheduled to?
You had budgeted
$57,000.
Yeah, you had budgeted $250,000, and it's your portion is going to be $307,000, give and take a few dollars.
The grant originally was $250,000 from the state, and we pick up all the difference. And we assumed and budgeted $500,000.
Yeah.
So we're over $500,000 total.
Originally, actually, and this was back in 2009, the original estimate was $600,000. When
True.
The grant came back, it was only $250,000,
right.
So we adjusted it
right.
to make it match. But then our total were going to be at $557,000.
We pick up the difference. The state wasn't, right?
Yeah,
correct.
And
they maxed out at $250,000.
Yeah.
Can we make the decision that yes, we're willing to put in the additional dollars to move forward, and then answer your questions or your questions?
Yes, but he had, and I said I'm willing to do that. He's got a lot of research to do before he can.
Yeah, but I'm willing to go forward with the extra.
Well, I mean, as long as you guys are willing to spend the extra money, we'll all come back and get the actual bid award once we get all of our stuff approved.
My understanding from you is that when you come back, there's a possibility that number could be something.
Well, the contract you actually have to sign will have to be for this $450,000. Once the contract's signed, because that's the way it was bid, we can't change these quantities before a contract's signed.
But you're thinking we might be able to change order outside.
I think there's a couple. I'm not saying that it's. I don't think we can change out $57,000, but we may be able to save 10 or 20 here or there type thing.
All right.
So I think you need to move forward.
Okay, yeah. That's what I needed.
Thank you, sir, very much. It's been a long haul on this project, hasn't it?
Yeah, like I said, 2009. Fly, so I'm surprised our costs aren't off more over 3 years, to be honest with you.
Well, and you've also had a lot of interesting parties to work with.
It's still you guys have time for a quick update and kind of where we're at with transportation. Board just to
kind of give you a timeline when you might see some results.
Regarding this issue?
Well, not
the
not
priority
this
matrix.
Issue,
with the
it's not posted that way, though.
No. Okay, we'll have to do that.
We can set that up. So. And it's up to you guys if you want an update. The Transportation Board was just afraid we were going to get through this whole matrix and you guys not know anything about it. And they wanted
well, I'd be to afraid to do that. It
turned itself down by 3 degrees.
Because it's just not listed it's anywhere long. Close to that.
Oh,
it
did.
I'll set something up. I'm just going to need to know where we're at.
Are you right with that? All right with that, Ron? I'm not. With the way it's posted.
No, we need to repost.
Repost it.
Thank you.
See you.
Jim or Danny, are you going to this informational meeting tonight at 6? Either of you?
I'm not going to be able to make it. I'm going to be out of town, as a matter of fact.
Depends on if my son's track meet's done by then. He should be. So the answer is a definite maybe. It's on my calendar.
Well, it's on mine, and I'm going to try, but I've got two things.
Are we
still working with you, Randy?
Let me
wrap up this last thing. I can do it in 60 seconds.
Do it in 60 seconds.
Agent of record process. Okay, I'm going through all the insurances that we've looked at. And following what's happened in the past, we're in the middle of the first 6 months of liability, comprehensive, etc. We went ahead and we moved to accept that based upon the bids that came in. We moved forward with the same company we were with. Can't remember the name of it.
The Springfield company?
Liability.
Oh, liability?
The one that...
I'm drawing a blank.
Well, you're not talking about One Beacon.
Yes. I couldn't get it out of my... Anyway.
Okay.
We went ahead and renewed, even though we had accepted bids and they were higher. Because there were a lot of questions and a lot of, we can't do this or we can't do that. And we only had one person that had bid because he was considered to be the broker of record, so he brought in different companies. I can't find record of when that happened, but I guess it's been a few years ago. Are you guys aware of when...
I think it was even before Jim.
It's 2009. I haven't dealt with it since I've been in office.
In my conversations, that's one of the half dozen questions I ask in trying to get all this stuff straightened out with the auditor's office. We need to bring our bidding up to snuff, which I know we're really doing through Erickson and through purchasing. What I'd like to do is to have that general conversation, have that with Ron.
And can Ron research and find when it took place?
Well, yeah, I'd rather put it in his hands. Or,
yeah.
I'm not fighting it.
Yeah.
But if, in fact, we either name an agent, which thus far I have hoped that we could open it up to everybody, but obviously that didn't work this last time. Because in this particular field, if you're the agent of record, you're the only person that bids. So can we set that for Monday or Thursday of next week?
Sure.
Okay.
But what's the process is, I guess, the question.
Well, that's what I'd like to
find out. Do you just want to work with Mr. Erickson for him to find the process, then when he has the information, come back to us?
Because the thing I'm thinking
is that we're going to say, okay, we don't know. Ron, go find the research and come back to us.
Well, here, I can speak to years ago. We went through a bidding process.
Right.
And we awarded. We just went through that on workers' comp. We did that on health. But we have tried to do it with the liability and the comprehensive. But it's different there because companies don't give the bids to multiple companies.
Right.
We give the bids to
Agent Record.
And we need to do that process. If it's been 5, 6, 7 years since there's been one that's named, then I'm guessing it's been
at least
since you've been here.
Yes, it's 08 or before.
That I just think if there's a process, we need to do the process and just do it right.
Why don't we just have Mr. Erickson do the research, and once he finds it, then come back to us.
That's what I'm okay. for.
Do you want to bring that up to him or send him a note and let him know? And then
well, he's going
to
be back
Monday.
Monday, I'll talk to him then.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Guys, do we have anything else? I don't see anything else here. Let me write down Monday here. And Dan, you had a reason that you wanted to go into exec session earlier. Can you tell us what that is? If we qualify it, that's what I would suggest we do.
There is a litigation in one of our situations that I was approached yesterday by a party that's involved in it that said that they were willing to go into some mitigation. And I said,
Is this personnel? Is it what would we go into?
This would be under
litigation.
Litigation, and then I had some personnel that came to my attention yesterday.
So here's my question is my only follow up question is, can this wait till Monday? If it can't, then it's an emergency. If it can wait till Monday, it's not.
And
that's the only thing I'm asking because that was the question that we always get asked from Durkin was
right.
Is this convenience or is this emergency?
Well, here's my deal. I thought it could wait till Monday. They said no.
Okay.
They didn't think it could. So I said, well, I'll just have to take it to the commission. It's not posted.
Litigation, I think, is dot three.
No, not litigation. I'll leave that up to you guys. I mean, it's hard to say anything about it without being in the executive.
Well,
you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you can't.
Let me just make sure here. I know it's
and
personnel.
Can you
just look
up? Personnel three. Okay, that's right.
Involved in that. Personnel issue.
Okay. Due to the nature of an emergency, I will move that we go into executive session at 610.021, which is litigation.
And three,
personnel.
And I'll second that motion.
Motion has been made and seconded to go into executive session. Excuse me, emergency executive session.
And
under Chapter 610.021, subsections 1 and 3.
Correct.
Discussion.
I would like the minutes to show that Commissioner Strahan, based off of the information he has, deems that it has to be today versus Monday. That's the only thing.
Time sensitive.
Time sensitive, right. And that covers the excuse.
All in favor say aye.
Danny aye.
Jim aye.
And Ron aye. All opposed nay. Motion carries. We'll stand in executive session.
There will be minutes.